Blog Talk Radio.
And welcome to tonight's show of Strange Magic After Midnight with myself, Victoria Frost. This show is brought to you by the Late Night Poets at allpoetry.com. You don't have to be a member of the website or the group to call in and read a poem of your own. However, if you like poetry, we highly recommend it. We host shows every night of the week on a variety of topics and themes to ensure that there is something for everyone to enjoy. And if you already know and love the shows and want to support us, be sure to check out our anthologies on Amazon. You get an awesome selection of poetry as well as help keep these shows running. Tonight, we're actually going to be looking at a poem called The Lost Generation. This is, in my opinion, a really fun poem because read one way, it reads almost as despair, whereas when you read it from the bottom up, it actually reads almost as a poem of hope. And so it shows that sometimes in life, there's always two coins to the same side or two sides to the same coin. So it'll be really, really interesting to dive into. And I believe we have Pam with us tonight. How are you doing tonight, Pam?
I'm doing good. Looking forward to the show.
I'm looking forward to it, too. I'm going to apologize. My youngest, we are sleep training her. She's at my office door. So you might hear pounding, and that's her just trying to get into me. So she's not,
yes,
not being abused.
She's
just
days.
Angry. And we have Randy on the phone. How are you doing tonight, Randy?
Just fine. How is everyone else?
Doing good. Doing good. And finally, we have Kels on the line. How are you doing, Kels?
I'm doing fine as frog there. How are you?
I am doing great. Excited to have everyone here. All right. Well, I don't think we have any SoundCloud tonight, so I'm actually going to put Randy on the spot because I know that you're not always able to stay with us all night. So let me grab your poem, and I'm going to post it up, and you can go ahead and take that read whenever you're ready.
Okay. Yeah, I really like the prompt in that poem. So the spin I got off of it was this poem, Suicidal Tendency. We now circle the toilet of life from a spasmodic flush. With a suicidal tendency, we charge in a headlong rush. Priorities askew and chasing after the easiest pleasure, immediate satisfaction, is now the rule of our measure, willing to cast off things that were once held in esteem to pursue those new and elusive, ever-changing dreams. At the cost of family, work has become the valued goal, the driving force of humans, mechanical without a soul, mistakenly thinking happiness is gained through stuff, becoming content, filling our lives with superficial fluff, and finding it to be temporary. So more must be sought, and with the sad revelation that happiness can't be bought. A brave new world of surrender to our every emotion. The state is now our nanny and demands our devotion. In just a generation, our society has been overthrown. Once upon a time, will be engraved on our headstone. Unfortunately, we're all at fault by apathy and neglect, and caught up in this mess at the cost of self-respect. Watching the destruction of Earth, along with mankind, we need to have an epiphany before we're out of time. End poem.
Oh, Randy, this is actually quite a stunning piece. Thank you for calling in to read that and sharing it with us. I'm excited about this. But with that being said, Kels, would you mind starting us off with some thoughts on this piece?
Definitely. The very beginning, we now circle the toilet of life from a spasmodic flush. It just goes on, you know, just trying to find my words to express how we've lost our ability to actually live in the moment instead of, you know, worrying about we're always worried about our job, whether or not we have enough money, if we have enough stuff, and it just expresses everything so very well. We do need to have an epiphany. We really do, because this world is going to pot. Well done, Randy.
Thanks, Gail.
Beautiful comment, Kels. And I do really appreciate that you kind of mentioned how so often we're distracted by almost menial things. You know, we think that if we have enough money, if we're secure enough in our job or we're high enough in our job, that somehow life is going to have meaning and matter. And the truth is that meaning in life does not come from the mundanity of work that we do to survive. And so I appreciate that call for the epiphany that you really highlighted. That was a really beautiful comment, Kel. Thank you. And Pam, what were your thoughts?
I really like this. I mean, that opening line, that is a strong start. We now circle the toilet of life from a spasmodic flush. Oh, my goodness. That could be a prompt for a contest. Mistakenly thinking happy. There's so many good points to this, you know, about what society has become. Like the whole idea of the ever-changing dreams, the cost of family, the idea that we put money and things first before family, before people, even before our own soul, our own, you know, our spirit, and the idea of, you know, it's things that make us happy. And I love how you have this conflicting phrase of a brave new world of surrender, as if people have tried to convince themselves that the bravest thing they can do is surrender. But in all honesty, the bravest thing you can do is keep going. And I like that you don't point a finger at any specific people or group, you know, person or group of people. It's unfortunately we are all at fault by apathy and neglect, mm-hmm. and caught up in this mess at the cost of self-respect. You know, as we ignore, you know, there's so many different forms of bullying nowadays, you know, and you can't, it's so difficult to escape it. And, you know, the idea that we just ignore the problems in the world that are going on, and we ignore the needs of our spirits and our self-respect, and it all begins to fall apart because of that. I have to say, yeah, this is an exceptional write, Randy, and it's very well done.
Thank you, Pam.
That was such a beautiful, beautiful comment. And I, too, really like kind of the contradictory idea of a brave new world being surrender, because you're right. So often we think that we're being brave, or we claim that there's bravery in giving up free will and giving up our rights and our fight, but sometimes it is that fight that is what's actually truly brave. We just like to not think that we're cowards. So I think that was a really stunning comment. I have to admit, I wanted to go last on this poem because I wanted to read it backwards, because I found it interesting that you started the poem standing at the toilet of life, at the edge, ready for that end, ready for that flush. And it made me wonder if this was going to be like Lost Generations that read backwards. It has ulterior or a different message. And thankfully, I finished just as Pam was speaking. So I apologize, Pam, that I didn't get as detailed a response to your comment. But it was because of that, because I wanted to dive into this. And I find that your poem does, in fact, mirror Generations Lost, in the sense that read from the top down, you're at the end of your rope. And it's kind of that last will, that last ditch effort. So often when people are suicidal, there's usually that moment where they reach out to someone or something. That is not good. Hey, Pam, are you logged in?
Me? Yes, I am.
Yeah. Can you check the stream for me? I'm going to pause my comment, Randy, and apologize. I'm going to pause my comment for a second and apologize to Randy. I'm going to pull Pam into the green room. With that being said, Kels, could you grab your poem and read it for us, and Randy comment?
Sure, I can do that.
Okay, thanks, guys. We'll be right back.
Lead by example. Once in a great while, when I was a young child, Mom yelled down the hall, "Haven't paid bills at all. Shut off threats in the mail. What do you plan, man?" Boy, she was mad. As I got older, I understood the point she was making. At the time, I was wondering, how can she yell at my dad? Brother told a dubious tale. Dad took him for a ride. Told him to wait outside because he had a girl inside. Say what? Dad had tricks, Seth. No, oh no, our dad wouldn't. Oh, Mom knew long before. They lead us by example's sake. Don't they know everything? On my inner reflection, think, I'm a mom. I'm not perfect. I've made plenty of mistakes. I sure don't know everything. I could be a hypocrite, blame my dad for being human, but truth is, I'm just as bad. I'd much rather love my dad. End poem.
Well, that was really good, Gail. I was looking for it and I couldn't find it because I wanted to read along with it too. But
sorry, I didn't put it up. It's up now.
It's okay. It's something that's very relatable. I also, I don't know how autobiographical it is because I've written similar poems myself. My dad was less than perfect, and it caused a lot of problems. So, but I love him just the same. So I thought that your poem was very relatable and really strong, and I see it's pulled up here now. But I enjoy it. I'm going to read it now. As I got older, I understood the point she was making at the time. I was wondering, how can she yell at my dad? When you're a kid, you experience a lot of things that your parents are doing that you don't understand. Then when you get older, you make your own mistakes and you understand it more clearly. My brother and I quite often talk about the fact that, despite our dad's shortcomings, we're pretty sure that he did the best he could with what he had, which is probably true of all of us in the long run. So I certainly have made my mistakes along the way, and my children have had their opportunity to be disappointed in, but still know that, that I love them despite that. I believe they do me too. So I thought it was very relatable, and I really liked it.
Thank you, Andy.
That was a really beautiful comment. That was a beautiful comment. And I have to say, I appreciated listening to your comment as I was reading. Because you're right, so often as kids, we look at our parents and we think that to some degree they must be perfect, at least at a young age. We don't see the flaws. We don't see the faults, which I think is why when parents split, it's so traumatic for kids. Because that's not what we're taught happens. We're taught that mom and dad love us. And how can mom and dad love us and not love each other? Because we're a piece of them. I did not grow up in a broken home, but I have an aunt. It's my mom's sister. And she was married to a gentleman who now as an adult has would bring his buddies over and get them all drunk, and they would gang rape my aunt. So I have six cousins through her, and they're probably not all 100% related. And you can definitely tell. There's some strong features that are not family features or my ex-uncle's features. And I remember going and visiting her, living in a rundown shack. My parents always were very cautious of us being there because it wasn't a safe home. And I remember walking past the bedroom, the master bedroom. And my ex-uncle was literally in bed with another woman. And my aunt was in the kitchen because she had just accepted that that's what it was supposed to be. And the entire time, my cousins just kind of accepted it. Like, this is how mom and dad do things. And there's a really harsh reality with that, an understanding that life is not the fairy tale that so often we are, that we're painted as kids. But just because my uncle was, frankly, a shitty spouse to my aunt, doesn't mean that he was a terrible dad. He definitely did bend over backwards for my cousins. He did care about them. And so I appreciate this piece, and I appreciate Randy sharing and being so vulnerable in that, because sometimes we forget that our parents are human, that they may have a lot of sins and they may have a lot of faults, but it doesn't mean that they are evil people. They're just broken people, and we all are. And so I appreciate even your revelation, Randy, in that your father did the best he could, because sometimes broken people just can't do much more than be broken, as much as they try not to be for those that are innocent. So a beautiful, beautiful right, Kells. It's actually quite heartbreaking and deep and thought-provoking. And thank you, Randy, for being willing to be vulnerable and sharing your experience and your story. It was just a beautiful comment. And before I hand the mic over to Pam to comment, I do believe a little chili pepper has snuck on to the show.
I'm here. You're here? Fallon's here, guys.
Hi, Fallon.
She's everywhere.
And this time I'm not going to neglect your poem because I was a dum-dum on, I think it was Sunday. So,
no, I fell asleep. I'll be honest, I fell asleep. I was out.
Well, I'm glad it worked out. So,
yeah.
All right. So with that, Pam, would you mind sharing a few thoughts on Kel's piece?
I would be happy to. Once again, Kel, you bring us your wonderful, straightforward style. It's raw, it's honest. It does, you know, and I can relate to this as somebody who has a mother who struggled with addiction and alcoholism and, you know, depression. You know, you learn sometimes much younger than you want to that your parents are flawed, that they are human. And, you know, it's not easy always moving forward, you know. And then, like, I like this all the way through, but particularly where it says, brother told a dubious tale, dad took him for a ride, told him to wait outside because he had a girl inside. And at those moments, when you hear it from a sibling, you know, you don't want to believe the sibling. You want to still believe that the parent is, you know, perfect. But the ending, that was particularly powerful. I could be a hypocrite, blame my dad for being human, but truth is I'm just as bad. I'd much rather love my dad. And I, you know, what I like about that is that can be expanded to any relationship. Every time we want to point that finger at somebody, we want to judge somebody, we have to remind ourselves that we are just as bad and our energy is better served loving somebody. Although sometimes loving somebody means having to walk away. You know, sometimes it means, okay, yeah, I love you, but I have to love you from a distance because you are toxic for me. You know? So just a wonderful write all the way through and very well done.
Thank you, everyone.
That was
very, very grateful for your kind comments.
Well, you got one more, so you're going to have to just wait a moment to thank all of us. So.
Well, I can
take
more.
Felon's still here, our little chili pepper. But I do want to say thank you, Pam, for that comment, because that was so beautiful. And I loved how you really pointed out that sometimes we just have to understand that we are no greater than the people that have harmed us or traumatized us to some extent, because they are broken. They are imperfect just like we are. And so making that conscious decision to love, to me, that's that true expression of love, the decision to love them, not because you have to, but because you want to. I think that was such a powerful comment. So thank you, Pam, for that. I do appreciate it. And Felon, close this one out.
Yes.
Give me your thoughts.
Oh, wow. This is an extraordinary rite for one, Kel. You opened up your heart and your spirit, and you let out what life was for you as a child, and you know, you didn't sugarcoat it or anything. And for me, I like that. I like raw emotions, and I like for the tale to be told. And yet, you know, my mother and father, they wrapped us in a blanket of not seeing everything that was done, but yet there were so many things that they didn't know was done. So, you know, and as I became an adult, I came to see that, damn, they had their shit together somewhat. You know, I'm messing everything up. I'm sucking at this thing. I'm not really doing this right. But, you know, we don't want to see our parents as anything other than greatness, because we are the cloak of that cloth. And we want to be example of that. And sometimes we just don't have to be. We can just cut off. We just cut pieces that we want out and patch it together what we want to be and wear what we want of them. So I think this is excellent, excellently written, and I think it speaks true to who you are. And I say kudos. Great job.
Thank you, Bellin. I love you, girl.
You're welcome. I love you, too.
Aren't you glad I made you wait to say thanks, Kel?
Yes.
And that was such a marvelous comment, Bellin. And I do really appreciate even how you referenced that sometimes people don't have their shit together, but they get it together for those that they love. Because you're right, that is even when they're not perfect. So I think that was just a stunning comment, as usual. All right, so with that being said, I'm going to post your poem up, Fel, and I will let you take that read as soon as I find the group. There it is. It's hiding.
Yes, it's an, I have to leave at work in 4 hours.
Oh, my goodness. Okay, so let's make sure we get your poem and we get some comments on it so you can actually sleep and save people's lives.
I've got some today, but here we go. It's called Wired. Reverence no longer bellows from the intuitive nodding, offering vision. Exploratory gathers reason and reports without even an incision. Youth carry debt to an education off the television. Hypothetical data, hypnotizing question, cattle to interposition. Amending anatomy to uneducated and personal reflection. Mental injections demand as a whole all to live on their perceptions. Removing hands of an inspection, protesting for sites, for rights that only call for further division. Lightning bugs replaced with video games where it's too cool to be a thug. Attitudes adjust to cure with drugs and support message with viral hugs. A reforming society is to debug and seeking individuality, becoming unplugged. End point.
Oh, Bellin, this is such a powerful write. I have to admit, I had to look to see when you wrote it, because this is like one of those five-minute masterpieces. You probably did write it in 5 minutes, but it was written 8 hours ago, so it wasn't 5 minutes before the show.
Yeah.
Well, this is a stunning, stunning write. So I'm going to first hand it off to Pam, because I would love to hear your thoughts on this, Pam.
Oh, absolutely. I'm sorry. I'm yawning. It's been a long day. It had nothing to do with your poem because, yeah, I know. I really like this. I like how you delve into the realm of how youth of today are oftentimes too connected to electronics. And we can't say just youth. I mean, even some of us older folks probably spend way too much time with electronics. And, you know, technology serves some wonderful purpose. Really, I mean, you know, without technology, I wouldn't have met all you amazing people. But at the same time, it takes us away from the use of creativity, the imagination, connecting with people face to face. Reverence no longer bellows from intuitive nodding, offering vision, exploratory gathers, reason, and reports without even an incision. That whole idea that, you know, there's no use of imagination, there's no use of vision. I also like the use of the word cattle to interposition, as if by, like, social media and memes and all that tell people what they're supposed to think. And it's almost that kind of nod and smile mentality. And I really also like the line, lightning bugs replaced with video games where it's cool to be a thug. You know, there is actually some amazing learning games out there. You know, you can get puzzle games. Even card games are an opportunity to use logical thinking. So there are great games out there, but there are ones that all they do is teach children that it's cool to be violent. And that is very unfortunate, because we have, you know, throughout history, you hope, you know, from generation to generation, people would learn more and more, but it's so difficult when, as a parent, you're you know, struggling against this kind of inspiration that children get. So absolutely a wonderful and thoughtful write, and very well done, Bellin.
Thank you, Pam. And it's not a brevity.
And it's not a brevity.
Well, that was such a phenomenal comment, Pam. And I feel like you really did dig into a lot of the meat of this poem. I mean, obviously there's more to it because Spellin just writes in these beautifully complex ways. But I did really appreciate your commentary that you mentioned about how social media does kind of catalyst. And, you know, as a parent, even struggling not only against social media in the sense of what your kids are being exposed to, but also the way that technology exposes them to stuff that possibly teaches some pretty bad behaviors and pretty bad habits, and the struggle of learning how to navigate this new realm that wasn't here, you know, 30, 40 years ago. So thank you for that. That was such a stunning comment. And Kel, what were your thoughts?
Well, I was just going to say 30, 40 years ago when, like, well, even 50, like when I was a kid, you know, they said that television and cartoons and all that would spoil our brains. But when you think about it now and the violence they have in these games and everything, and kids aren't monitored as much as they should be or were back when I was a child. Because, you know, the streetlights came on, you were in the house. If you weren't in the house, when you did show up, you got your butt spanked.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? And children are, you know, they're not disciplined as well as they were back when I was a kid. That's all, you know, that's what I'm trying to point out. And that's not truly the fault of parents. Because, you know, there's so many strict rules for parenting anymore that, you know, it's hard to really think or find ways to say, hey, this ain't right. You're doing, you know, you shouldn't be doing that. And to teach our kids morals and values like they did when we were little, you know, which is to get it pretty much, you know, pounded to us. So, you know, I'm not saying that it was better. I'm just saying that's the way it is now. And I kind of got off track. I'm sorry.
You're doing great.
Really, it hits on things that are happening today with children. Youth carry debit to an education off television. Hypothetical data, hypnotizing questions. Google. You know, all you got to do is look something up and you can get an answer. I use Google all the time. And you don't always necessarily get the right answer. It depends on what site you're looking at. And kids don't always know what's proper and what isn't. Because this thing is just so full of a little bit of this and that that's just, it's just amazing. It's very, and it explains, you know, so much about how society and the children are today. It's kind of sad. It really is. So I'll end now.
Thank you, Gail.
That was a stunning comment. And I really do appreciate you sharing your experience because it does speak volumes to the way that things have changed. You do hit on that idea of once upon a time, we weren't monitoring people's screen time. We weren't worried about who your kid was talking to. You weren't worried about where they were. I mean, I remember riding my bike around the city just everywhere. And now as a parent myself, you know, there's that fear of going to be following my kid, who's going to be watching my kid, who's mm-hmm. going to be influencing my kid. And that's not something that was as worried, you know, even back when I was growing up. And so I really do appreciate your comment in that, because you really do highlight just how different the world is, just how different we get our news, how we interact differently. Not to say that there's not benefit to it, like Pam said. You know, I wouldn't get to know Pam or any of you guys if it was not for technology. So there's beauty in it, but there's also a lot of bad that comes with it. And so I appreciate you highlighting that difference. And with that, Randy, I know it's getting short on time for you, but would you be able to give us a comment or two before you run away? Or you could just do the whole show. I won't say no to that.
Okay. I will have to leave, but no, I love Phelan's poems, and the pace of this, the power of it and the pace of it was incredible. It's such a powerful poem. It was kind of, all I could relate it to was, it was like one gut punch after another. I mean, it just kept coming at you. I liked in the second stanza, amending anatomy to uneducated and personal reflection, mental and injections demand as a whole, all to live off their perception. You know, we've got through the media, as broad as it is and available to everyone, so many opinions out there, and everyone's trying to force their opinion on others. So that's something that we're always having thrown at us. And like Pam mentioned about even like video games and things like that, that there are good ones. There are useful video games that kids or individuals get paid in that are beneficial, but the most popular are the more violent. And it seems to me that that has really desensitized the youth of America, especially, and it continues as long as they go from their teens into their 20s, desensitized them to humanity and made it more impersonal when you can kill people repeatedly in a video game. And it's just a game, but it translates over into real life when we see how many people killed on a weekend in Chicago or something like that, to realize that people have been desensitized to the point that human life is meaningless all too often. So it's pretty disturbing. So I thought this was an extremely poem, and I really liked it.
Thank you, Randy. You touched a lot on that, because what the problem is with society today is that we, you know, back when I was younger, we didn't have a platform to express ourselves, even if our ideals were wrong and half delivered, and you just have a little bit of substance of knowledge, and that is very dangerous for some people, because then they put their spin on it, and then the whole thing gets out of whack. So I mean, an incident that is not even directed toward a certain way of resolve is, you know, backflip back to something else that it's not even, that it's not, and it just causes rift in different cultures and different, you know, ethnicities. And it's sad, because people do not take the time the incision is to cut into the matter and see what the actual truth is, and you know, dive in and see what is actually underneath the skin and find out the truth. And they just jump in and just start getting on the bandwagon and not even really inspect or even take a moment to see what the truth is. So, thank you, you know, for y'all's comment.
That was such a beautiful comment, Randy. And even what you were speaking to, Fallon, what it really made me think about your comment, Randy, was that I used to hate zombie movies. This is going to be the most embarrassing thing I've ever revealed on the show. So nobody judge me and still love me after this. I hated zombie movies. To the extent that when Shaun of the Dead came out, which Shaun of the Dead was kind of like that joke version of Dawn of the Dead, I legitimately slept on my parents' floor. I mean, I was well into my late teens when that came out. I slept on my parents' bedroom floor for a week and had nightmares of zombies crawling into their room to like eat me. It was terrible. I was not good with zombie movies. Now I can watch The Walking Dead and not have an issue, and I watch other zombie movies and I don't have an issue, and it's because I've subjected myself to it so much that I've started to become desensitized. I didn't like zombies because there's no hope. I remember that very clearly. There's no hope in a zombies, in a zombocalypse, because if you're pregnant, if you're fat, if you're disabled to just about any extent, you're going to die. And let's be honest, society cannot continue if you can't have babies. And it, I mean, have you ever seen an 8-9 month pregnant woman try and run? Like it doesn't work. Does not work.
Mm-hmm.
And so I appreciate Randy's comment talking about the desensitization of violence, because we can see it even in minor degrees. We can see it in how we, in our own selves, you know, again, I didn't like zombie movies. Now I really don't mind them. And there's a few that I actually really, really like. And so I appreciate that, because so often, you know, we say we can't blame video games for all the violence. And yet at the same time, there's something to it. Because we do see desensitization in ourselves. And it's not that I'm getting braver and more mature, it's that it just doesn't impact me as much. So I really, really appreciate that comment. And I know that Fel thanked everybody, but I'm going to add my 2 cents now because I want to comment on this. I really love this piece. In fact, I think this is probably one of the best pieces that you've ever written. And I'm not just saying that to say that. You continue kind of like what Randy said. It really does punch you in the gut. And you're not out here sitting and putting your own beliefs out there, but you are calling into question things that we see. Regardless of political beliefs, there are people who are just following things like cattle because that's what it is. We see it on both sides. People don't do their due diligence. They don't do their research. They don't follow what they do. They are following just because that's what everybody else that they follow is doing. It happens on both sides politically. The idea that we have kids, and I see this, you know, as an accountant, I see this, where credit card companies go onto college campuses and they get kids into credit card debt because we have no education, no financial education, at least in America anymore. That went out the window a few decades ago. So there's no real financial education. People don't understand taxes. They don't understand how to balance a checkbook. They don't understand the impact of credit card debt. They don't understand the time value of money. They don't understand how to properly handle their finances. And so when you say youth carrying debt to an education off the TV, it really rings out to me, not just because we do have a debt issue in America, but also because we do have people who are going into debt. And my sister has a friend. She has 3 student loans because every time she goes to school, they get deferred. So she just keeps going to school and she never gets a degree. And she's doing these online universities that aren't even accredited. So even when she gets her degrees, they're worthless. And so I appreciated that, because we do have this debt incentive, at least in the United States, is detrimental. And really people aren't learning anything. They're just getting a piece of paper, but it doesn't make them any more useful in digging themselves out of the hole that has been predatorily dug for them. The idea of being hypnotized with media, with supposed data, which we know can be skewed in many different ways and can be interpreted in many different ways. Statistically speaking, data can be interpreted 4 or 5 different ways, even more, just depending on the criteria that you pull from. And so the same study can be read 4 or 5 or even more. And so yet we seem to say, well, this one's the most right. And sometimes it's not. But we don't have, again, that idea of digging down and understanding where these things come from. So that's just your first stanza. That's extremely, extremely hard hitting. And then, of course, you go in to understand that sometimes we, and I appreciate it, amending anatomy to uneducated and personal reflection, which could be this idea of, you know, body dysmorphia, which is something I actually have. You know, I'm a woman, born a woman, will always be a woman. Not that there's anything wrong with people who are transgender. That is, you know, legitimate. People need to be who they are. But I do have body dysmorphia because of traumatic history in my past. And so sometimes we also need to say that in my personal journey to be better for myself, for my kids, healthier, and move forward with my life in a positive way, sometimes we have to not necessarily just force our body to be what it is. You know, plastic surgery is a thing. It's an easy fix, but I want to fix, for me at least, the root cause. And so that idea of, instead of just chopping bits and pieces of our body off for whatever reason, getting liposuction, which you could say goes into body dysmorphia, or people who obsessively eat, which can also fall into body dysmorphia, finding the root cause for those. You know, it's not just a transgender thing. It is an across the board understanding the root. And that's not to say that some people aren't transgender and meant to be transgender. That's not saying that some people who are heavier are meant to be skinnier and all of that. It's just saying that sometimes we need to dig a little deeper to understand why we feel the way we feel. And I think that society has gotten lost in that, in the attempt to be our true selves. We don't always find our true selves. We make the outside appear what the inside wants to be, and yet we still feel hollow because of it. These mental incisions demanding as a whole all to live off of their perception. I personally don't get the pronouns thing. I don't have a problem with people who need it, but I don't get the personal pronouns thing. I don't feel a need to tell people I am a she, her. If they want to decide that I'm a he, him, then that's their problem. But this idea of forcing everybody else to conform to it, otherwise you're offended, kind of forgets the old idea of just pulling yourself up by your bootstraps. You know, again, I will respect people who need it. It's not my place to tell them that they're wrong. That's their life. That's what they need. That's fine. It doesn't affect me. It doesn't hurt me. But I don't believe in giving that power to other people. And so I don't need people to perceive me how I want them to perceive me, because you're never able to change anybody that way. Removing hands-on inspection, protesting for rights that only call for further division. Again, this kind of goes more into, at least for me, into that political idea that the United States is supposed to be united. You know, united we stand, divided we fall. And yet I would swear that day and age, we are more divided than we ever have been. And, you know, just how we continue to find reasons to be divided. You know, once again, asking and seeking people to find unity, find the things that unite us rather than divide us. And then, of course, I love the idea of lightning bugs replacing video games, because who hasn't chased lightning bugs? I'm sure more modern generations haven't, some haven't, but we've lost that simplicity. Instead, we need to have something to intrigue us and keep us busy, rather than being able to go out and just enjoy nature and find a way to entertain ourselves rather than to be entertained. Instead of finding ways to adjust our attitude, again, seek our own personal problems and find reconciliations for that, work through the problem to the solution, we are taking medications and, you know, sending viral hugs and finding these communities that sometimes we hinder ourselves with, because we don't have that personal connection that we so need. And so finally, here we are claiming that we're reforming society, that by seeking individuality, all of a sudden we're all sort of better at it. That reminds me of the saying, I am unique, just like everybody else. But this understanding that in this idea of yourself, in this idea of society claiming to be enlightened and claiming to be united front and seeking a united front and doing all of these things that they society in many ways, we've become unplugged from each other. We don't connect the same way we do. And it could be argued that that comes all the way down to the understanding that we no longer connect with ourselves. We don't understand why we do things sometimes. And so to me, this really goes back into that. It calls back to those days when we got to dictate our perception of our life and the solution of our problems, and not just a quirky quote that we saw on TikTok that really worked really well for us. And so that's what our motto is for the week. It's such a powerful right. And frankly, my comment just doesn't even do it justice. It's stunning. So
thank you guys so much. Oh my gosh. Thank you.
Absolutely. All right. And with that, I'm going to welcome Silk to the show. Hi, Silk. How are you doing?
Hey, Victoria. Everybody else that's on?
You came on.
Are you all doing that?
You came in just in time, because we only had one guy on the show, Randy, and he just dropped. So now you are our volunteer tribute male for the show. So ladies, have at him.
Yeah, I don't mind at all.
He would love that.
That I do agree with. He would love that.
Oh, yeah,
all right. Yeah, totally innocent. All right. Well,
yes,
since
exactly.
You're here,
a paragon of
I am actually. We need to talk about your definition of saintly paragon. Well, since we have a masculine. Yeah, totally, totally. Since you're here, I'm actually going to have you read Frank's piece, Coveted Not, or
sure.
Covet Not, so Poetic Picasso. And that is up in the group whenever you're ready, Silk.
Yeah, I'm read for Frank. If I get my mouse to cooperate to click on the link here. Here we go. Okay, Covet Not by Poetic Picasso. I have often heard that in life we are destined the day and our sovereignty upon us a grand recognition in earnest, but to some people it is accompanied by a measure of honor, or 'tis merely a day to acknowledge the plight of an existential soul. In sooth, there is nothing more intimate than the gift of one special day, but there are times when what we desire is less than what we need, or what we request is more than what we expect, and the only relevancy is lost in the token gesture of appreciation. To the humble is not the same as to be reverent, for to be forgotten is easier than to be remembered, and what we should reward is not mostly that which we feel entitled, but what we merit and what we have earned by our actions. To be thankful is not the same as to be ungrateful, for to be fortunate is gratifying than to be ill-fated. And what we should recall is not the day we were born, but the day we have aged gracefully in our wisdom. Thus, covet not that which you do not have, but enjoy that which you already appreciate, for a day to be remembered is a day to cherish. Time to live another day on this date. You might be a spoilt brat, or I just a cheap arse, and all that matters is not the asseveration I avow, but what you believe you are truly from within, to the world that fails to recognize you as the main actor on the center stage. Pim-pum. Oh, I like that.
That is really quite fantastic. Thank you for that excellent read, Silk. And thank you, Frank, for providing that for the show. It is, yeah. Well, and I always say he has such an apt pen name because he does really write in these beautiful pictures that I would say is the verbal version of Picasso. So thank you both for that.
Oh, yeah.
And so with that, Pam, would you mind sharing your thoughts starting off?
Absolutely. I'd be happy to. First of all, great read there, Sil. You know, I just, wonderful use of language here. I really, really like that the, in sooth, there is nothing more intimate than the gift of one special day, but there are times when we desire it, when what we desire is less than what we need. I like that he reminds us that it's wonderful to celebrate yourself, to celebrate the fact that you were born and you are a gift to people and to the world. But at the same time, you know, when we're given everything we desire, it doesn't create us into the person we're supposed to be. To be thankful is not the same as to be ungrateful, for to be fortunate is gratifying than to be ill-fated. And what we should recall is not the day we were born, but the day we have aged gracefully in our wisdom. I really like that. This is just filled with some really brilliant advice on the whole idea that it's not the day we were born. It's not, you know, anything that we necessarily learn in youth, but it's, and not a specific age, I should say. It's nothing we learn at a specific age, but it's a different age for everybody when you realize that you have the potential to be the type of person that absorbs and thinks about the things that really matter. So excellent write and very well done.
Damn. And I really love that you even brought in the idea that it's not the day that we're born, but the day that we gain that wisdom, the day that we've aged there to where we understand what we can learn from others, what we can leech from life, what we can appreciate, because that too was really my favorite part. So beautiful comment. And Kels, what were your thoughts?
Well, I thought it was wonderful to appreciate what we have and not what we think we need, or to fill our lives with just junk. You know, to be thankful is not the same as to be ungrateful. It is gratifying than to be ill-fated. And it's just, his wording is just spectacular. You might be a spoiled brat, or I just a cheap fart, and all that matters is not the admiration I got, but what you believe you are truly from within. That's just so very well said. Wonderful, absolutely wonderful writing. Very powerful and insightful.
That was such a beautiful comment, Kels. And I do appreciate what you were kind of saying there, especially at the end, is that so often we could let society dictate us. We could let other people's views, even our lovers or our friends who are like, you know, you're an so place in Idaho called Athol, and it sounds like asshole. And so if you hear me say that, that's what I'm referencing, because it's like Albert Dumas is still dumbass. So anyways, but society, so often we allow society to kind of dictate, you know, who we are, what we are, even our friends and our family. And so sometimes they're like, you know, you're an apple. And truthfully, it's not that we're always that way. Sometimes it's just a matter of truly embracing who we are, even if that's not who our family wants us to be, or friends or society. So I think that was a stunning, stunning comment. And Silk, what were your thoughts having read it?
Yeah, I really enjoyed this entire piece. It had some wisdom, I think, in here too, some very deep old world wisdom too, to not especially where you're saying down here about do not covet that which you not have, but be happy with what you're already happy with. I mean, a lot of life is about learning and growing, and a lot of that's through pain and not getting what you want, which is sad to say, but it's true. I think I've found it myself. Sometimes when I get everything I want, I feel empty inside sometimes, and it's true. I don't know about other people, but it's like, I'll give you an example. Like, I play video games, and like I'll be struggling to play a game, having fun, but the second if I get frustrated with it and I cheat and give myself all the stuff or whatever, it just becomes just totally, whatever. I don't even like it anymore. Just an example there. But I think a lot of the human condition is meant to be struggling and learning from that struggle. And when you take that away, I think, or covet other things that you don't have yet, I think it's just a waste of energy, I think. And this poem really conveyed that very well. I enjoyed it.
I love the way that you said that, because so often we do stop and think that if only we had. And the idea of, you know, trying to fill those holes, trying to find the thing that suddenly makes life so much worth it, we're never really going to find it. And so I really appreciated that comment, because, you know, life just, it's not stuff that is fulfilling. So thank you for that. And Ellen, would you mind sharing your thoughts on this?
Yes. I mean, for me, what it spoke to me about is basically, you know, humans are very self-centered individuals. We are very driven by our own name being called, or, you know, being said out loud, because we want to feel that belonging to something greater than just ourselves. We want to be a part of the bigger scheme in life, and that we you know, we're very narcissistic creatures. We are. We just we live off of the vanity of ourselves. And I mean, even you know, Hunchback of Notre Dame, he had a sense of narcissistic behavior and self-centered and you know a little bit of vain in him. We all do. You know, it's part of who we are. It's part of our instinctive things because we want to be important and loved. And so I think this really spoke of a lot of wisdom and a lot of life experiences. And you can't gather those kind of thoughts and those kind of lessons if you haven't lived them and wear a badge of it. So I think this is a great right, Frank, and it's just, I mean, I really enjoyed it a great deal.
Ellen, that is such an amazing comment because you're right. Life, really, the value of it, the wisdom that comes from it, comes from those experiences. It comes from not the stuff that we acquire, but really those moments that we gather in our heart and our soul and allow us to grow as a person. And that, you know, just that value. So thank you, Fred. That was a stunning comment. As usual, Frank just does an amazing job. You know, he has a true wisdom about him. And I don't know Frank's age. I assume that he's like close to my age, which is, I assume he's close to my age, which isn't like old, but it's not like super young. But I truly do believe that he has a deep understanding of how people work and the real value in life and what really adds of, you know, how we're shaped and how we allow events to shape us. And, you know, I actually was commenting on another poem today that wisdom is knowing what you do not, is knowing that you know nothing. And Socrates, or Socrates, I always say that name wrong. Socrates is the one that said that. And I feel like Frank has truly learned that. He has truly taken that as a part of him in his path as he walks this life. And I think that that's also expressed in his work, just this understanding that across his poems, be it sensual or not, be it something that's more thought-provoking like this or something that's even just an appreciative poem, he always has this beautiful understanding of capturing the moment because it is finite and it will never happen again. And that, to me, is that true wisdom which he has made a part of himself. Fallon has now, so I want to say thank you, Fallon, for calling in, for hanging out with us. I truly, truly appreciate it. I'm pretty sure she's headed off to sleep because she does have work in the morning. So have a great night and sleep well. So with that being said, we are going to move on to some of the poems that were provided for the contest. And the first one that I'd like us to touch on is called Anger. I look about me at the world in which I live and I am angry. I'm angry at the selfish lies, the selfish thoughts, the selfish acts. The selfishness makes me angry. I hear the loud demands of those who think they have the right to make demands on the rest of us. It's not as if they care. It's just a power struggle, and it makes me angry. They tear down statues as if that changes anything. They don't salute the flag as if that show of respect is too hard. They burn buildings, and with them, they burn lives. Lives that aren't theirs to burn. It makes me angry. They save the whales and spotted owls and at the same time kill babies. They're offended as so easily, so very easily, by the things that were not offensive before. Before what? When did everything become so offensive? Why did it become offensive? I don't know. I don't understand. And it makes me angry. End poem. And Silk, would you mind starting us off with thoughts?
You say Kel?
You said Kel or Silk, yeah.
Silk.
And then Kel, if that was
Silk.
Silk. Okay, I didn't
I want,
know.
I want
that,
you,
so.
Sir, to comment first.
Okay, I'll do my best. First of all, good read, great read, and I did enjoy this piece. It had some what's the right word? Damn, I haven't been able to think of good right words lately. But it had a kind of quality about looking out for the earth, like activism, I guess, maybe a little bit, which sometimes some activism is misguided, in my opinion, but some other times it's good and called for. But I really enjoyed how she said down here, they're offended so easily, so very easily by things that were not offensive before. Before what? When did everything become so offensive? Why did it become offensive? I don't know. I don't understand. And it makes me angry. And this is something I have seen lately to me, because in the past, like, few years particularly, it's like the whole woke culture and the whole, what do you call it, what do they call it, cancel culture going on now. Just, I won't get into politics because I know Gene hates that, but all I'll say is just this piece, I really like that, because I kind of, I'm kind of like that too. Like, what the hell? When did everything come, when did everybody become offended so easily about everything? And that's what this spoke to me about. I enjoyed the piece.
I think that was a really great comment. And what I think I really appreciate about it is that, you know, I've had kind of those grappling with where we are now versus where we were when, you know, I was a kid. And I remember, I always kind of point to Mrs. Doubtfire, because you had gay uncles, you had cross-dressing, you know, none of it was offensive. You had a man taking a female's role. None of it was offensive, or at least I've never heard anybody say I was offended by Mrs. Doubtfire. Yeah. So it is hard to reconcile what is offensive versus what is not. What is, yeah. But, you know, and I do wonder if this day and age, if that would be something that would be considered inappropriate because of how society has kind of been directed. So I appreciate your comment. I appreciate you not going political. I'll be honest, this could be a very politically charged piece.
Yeah, that's why I left out that first two lines of that stanza I quoted. So, because you go way political with those first two lines. Oh, did I get dropped?
I hear you.
Oh, I think Victoria dropped.
Victoria,
yeah, I think she dropped, but no, okay. Who hasn't commented on this poem yet?
If you're talking,
by the way,
I am here.
Okay.
Pam, for all of a sudden I was just gone. And then it was like, Pam is gone too. And I just had this moment of, oh, shit. We picked the wrong poem, guys. No.
Oh, don't worry.
The poem made me so angry. No. But no, I do appreciate you not making this poem, not diverting away from the political thing. But I do also appreciate, you know, just kind of the reconciliation. Because I think anybody growing up from the 80s and the 90s, and even the 70s, I think all of us, kind of the older generation, struggle because this is the offensive, you know, being offended and the idea of, like you mentioned, cancel culture. I think that it's very against what some of us grew up with and trying to find where we fit in this world where I know there are people who have extremes from my generation, but I just don't think that we are tend to be of those extremes more often. And so I do appreciate what you say, because I myself have struggled with that reconciliation of that. So with that being said, Pam, would you mind sharing your thoughts?
I would be happy to. First of all, I really appreciate that through poetry, we're able to express ourselves and, you know, bring up those issues that concern us. You know, poetry is just a great medium. And I also like that she brings up anger. In fact, I think anger is a wonderful title. And I am angry is a very wonderful statement, because, in fact, and this was something I've been talking to about a friend who's older than I am, is that, you know, so often in the past, women were taught all your emotions must be positive. women don't get angry. Ladies don't get angry. But, you know, women have as much right to have a righteous anger as anybody else. And I think it's especially important that not only for those things that we believe strongly about, those social issues we believe strongly about, but also just for our own mental sanity, that we realize it's perfectly okay. It's more than okay. It's a part of being human, is to express that anger that we have, that we feel, rather than holding it inside. I think this is a wonderfully expressed poem and very well done.
Oh, Liam, that was such a stunning comment. And I always love the way that you phrase your comments, because you're right. You know, whether you agree with the message behind a poem or not, it is still a beautiful expression of something that someone is either struggling with or going through, or even allowing us to see a portion of their soul and inner workings of their mind. And so I really appreciate your comment, because it does highlight truly the beauty of poetry and the beauty of this poem. Like you, I actually really appreciate that Celtic Queen used anger, because it is one of those powerful emotions that for a very long time has had that negative connotation, but in the right context, it really can be quite powerful. It can be righteous, and it does show just how deeply this impacts us. Happiness is an emotion that we often think of positively, but truly nobody is happy all the time. Happiness is valuable because it comes in those big moments. Anger, too, is valuable because it comes in those hard moments. And what we do with it is really what determines if it's good or bad. And this really highlights that moment. And so I appreciate your comment, Cam, because it really does focus on the beauty of this, which is a vulnerable and yet vibrant expression of contemplation and reflection. So thank you for sharing that, Pam, truly. And Kels, on to you. Do you have any comments you'd like to share?
Sitting here nodding, yes. yeah, I totally agree with everything. I want to touch on a couple things. They don't salute the flag as if that show of respect is too hard. And I realized that when we went to the fireworks and we had someone up there singing the Star Spangled Banner and the flag was up and people didn't stand up. They didn't salute. And I'm guilty of it too. So somebody said, hey, shouldn't we be standing for the flag? Well, shoot, yeah. But, you know, it's not something we should forget. And the burning buildings and people with them, that's something I was thinking about a few months ago with all the riots and stuff. You know, they're burning down buildings and stuff. Those are people's livelihoods. So, yes, they're burning lives with them because, yeah, that makes me angry. And there was one other thing. Oh, yeah, to save the whales and spotted owls that kill babies. That's one thing I'm very passionate about, is not to get into the political thing, but abortion, it just burns me up. I am 100% pro-life. My son's dad wanted me to abort. And we wouldn't believe in how I was going to, you know, do that, because it's a life, you know. But I can also see the other side of that, where a woman might feel justified in doing that. You know, I won't condemn anyone for their actions. It's not in me to do that. But this was a very powerful, well-written poem. And, yeah, that's it. I'm done. Well done.
No, that was a great comment. And I'm glad. I mean, the beautiful thing of poetry is that sometimes it allows us to speak about things that we might not otherwise speak about. And it lets us connect with people who perhaps haven't had the opportunity to speak the way that the poet is speaking. And so I'm so glad that you connected with this piece that Celtic Queen wrote, because it does show the power of the piece. It does show that it is not just one person who feels this way. There's a great number of people who feel this way, and it's the same across the aisle, no matter what you believe. But being able to connect with someone on these deeper levels that usually take more time to speak to others about is one of the many beautiful aspects of poetry. So I do really appreciate you sharing that and sharing how it really impacted and connected with you. I think that was a very powerful statement to make. So thank you for that, Kels. What I really liked
Thank
about
you.
It is, you know, similar to what I said with Silk and similar with even Pam's, is that this poem, I think, no matter what you believe in, oftentimes in life, we are stuck at these crossroads of trying to understand things and trying to remember where we came from. And there's always that idea, we want to honor where we came from. You know, I would love to honor the 80s and the 90s. Nothing better than Thundercats and Mrs. Doubtfire. You'll have to fight me if you think otherwise. Being able to really move forward in life in a way that's going to allow us to be beneficial to society, it sometimes does require those stages of grief, and anger is a very valid one. And so to me, I love the expression that they've given us in this. I love those deep ruminations because really the part, like you said, Kels, they save the whales and spotted owls, and at the same time they kill babies. It reminds me of children when they become 3, 4, and 5, they start to understand hypocrisy. And we see it on both sides. This is not a conservative, liberal, Democrat, Republican, you know, hail the spaghetti monster issue. This is an across-the-board issue that we as humans are often going to have a rationale for contradictory beliefs. And it's very hard when you're trying to find some kind of compromise, no matter what it is, to see this almost hypocritic stance. And so I appreciate this. I appreciate the raw emotion of anger because where Pam was speaking, how so often it had to be tempered or handled or explained away as that time of the month. You know, what woman hasn't heard that? This is a beautiful expression of just that raw emotion, exactly as it is. It's not, I'm angry, people are assholes. It is, this makes me angry. It's a general statement. It's not aggressive. It's not mean. It's not confrontational. It's, I don't understand. I don't know. I don't know when all this stuff happened. And it did. I'm not going to lie. It did, at least from my perspective, seem to come up overnight. You know, baby is cold outside getting banned from the radio and still like reeling from. But, you know, all of a sudden we did have all these things that are offensive. And it seemed like once one happened, it just kind of tumbled. And you know, some I agree with, some I don't. And just kind of understanding how these things happen, anger is a natural part of that. If you think about people who are confused, a lot of times they display it as anger. And it's valid because it's sitting here trying to make sense of a world that you've been part of for a while and you're supposed to have it figured out because you're not a child and it just doesn't make sense. And so I love this. It's not violent. It's not confrontational, but it is a beautiful expression of the frustration, of the anger, of trying to understand how we fit in this world. And it is just a really wonderful, vulnerable piece that's willing to say, I don't know what to do with this stuff. And sometimes that's just where we have to start. I'm angry because I don't know what to do with this stuff. Doesn't mean we can't fix it. Doesn't mean we can't find a compromise. It doesn't mean that we're not going to move on from it and learn to just deal with it, because sometimes it's what you just have to do. But it's okay sometimes just to admit that right now it's hard. So a beautiful write. by Celtic Queen. And thank you, everyone, for your wonderful comments. All right. Up next, we are going to have Houdini's Last Act. And Pam, would you be so kind as to take this one?
I would be happy to. Houdini's Last Act by R.C. Sunday. And it goes like this. Mice are trifling little menaces. Some kill them by poison to go away and die. That's why. And you know what? That when the small turds that make you feel dirty disappear, there are other ways to kill them, caught and tortured by the cat or letting them get stuck to glue to die a slow death of dehydration. I get it over with quick and find them the next morning fastened to a small block of wood with a metal bar flattening the top of their little gray skull. I did see something last week, a first for me, a mouse who somehow got out of the trap after the death slap. Blood was between the trap and his corpse about 6 inches away. I wondered what he thought of his rare, futile feat. End poem.
Full read, Pam, and a wonderful write by R.C. Sunday. Thank you.